Welcome to the Lorehounds and our newish podcast, Into the West. I'm David, one of the main hosts at the Lorehounds. With me today are the co-hosts of this podcast, Red Zippy and Brian 8063.
Hello, howdy.
The dynamic sibling duo. I don't know. We need some sort of moniker for you guys.
Yeah.
The Tweedledee, Tweedledum, maybe. I don't know. No, that's a little.
That's maybe too much inside.
Very inaccurate, also.
Yeah. The super siblings.
Super siblings. Oh,
there you go.
So, and that, of course, is our favorite Tolkien scholar, Marilyn R. Pakila, joining us today for a very special episode, which we're going to talk about in just a second, though. Marilyn, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, David. I've been on a real high from having just seen Project Hail Mary. So,
got it.
That'll lift me up. Even talking about, you know, death and grieving and all that kind of stuff. So yeah,
right.
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Great. All right. Well, this turns out to be, I believe, our second official episode.
That is correct.
Right. And the way, just because it's still new, we're still doing a little bit of setup and educating the listening audience, is that Into the West is our memoriam podcast. We are at a time period where many of the great film and TV stars are shuffling off this mortal coil. And we were talking about them in one of our subscribe. Various people would pass away, and then we would have a film review kind of thing on our subscriber exclusive shows. And then we're like, you know what? We need to actually handle this on a main show basis. And both Brian and Lisa, sorry, are you're both big film nerds. Your family culture is film, especially these era of actors that were discussing. And so, the long and short of the story is that a podcast was born, and that is this podcast. However, today, we wanted to talk a little bit about what the meaning of the podcast title, Into the West, where it comes from, what it means, and sort of what thoughts and ideas around death and what different cultures and authors and world, you know, different peoples at different times have thought about what's beyond the veil. And since we have roots, our podcast community has roots in Tolkien, Into the West seemed like a natural podcast title for this podcast. And we said, well, we can't talk about Into the West without having an opportunity to talk to Marilyn about like what all of this could mean.
Well, thank you so much. It's delightful to be here with you all.
Yeah. So feedback, you can email us at intothewest@thelorehounds.com. We have a channel set up dedicated for this show in our Discord. Community Discord is open and welcoming to everyone. We are also independent podcasters. And so while ad dollars are nice, they are not reliable and they're not as good quality as your subscription dollars. So if you appreciate what we do, and how we operate and how we make sure that we, you know, share with everyone in our community, we would invite you to subscribe if you are able to do so. There are links for the Discord and the subscription stuff. All of that is in the show notes for this episode. You can also get to all of our affiliate podcasts through that. There's a link tree and there's a page and it's got all kinds of stuff. So go and do those things in your own time, but they are there for the show notes. So, as we were talking, the idea of what Into the West means. And from here, I'm going to hand back over Brian and Lisa if either of you has some things that you would like to prep for the episode before we actually get into a fuller discussion with Marilyn. I'll toss it over to you, Lisa. Anything you want to reflect on or add, just sort of at a broad contextual level?
I know one of the things that we want to really talk about is In what ways this time is about celebrating and remembering in a positive, very natural way. You know, it's not about, you know, oh, that's it, they're dead, you know. And, you know, so many of these artists that mean so much to Brian and I, and we hope our listeners, really just wanted to kind of have a really nice conversation about what passing on means to us, and right. therefore how we want to talk about those that have passed on the celebrity sphere.
And it's interesting because in our community, one of the things that our community enjoys is, yeah, we're looking at a lot of speculative fiction titles, books, TV mm-hmm. shows, movies, some books that are movies and some movies that are books and some that you spin off the television shows. I'm joking, Marilyn, because of Project Hail Mary is a current topical conversation, and that is a crossover title. But we, in the best traditions of literature and speculative fiction and all these kinds of things, examining a title or a movie is a way for us to process the world.
Yes.
But we, the people that I think congregate in this community, it's one of the things that we enjoy is not just reacting to a piece of media going, oh, I liked it, I didn't like it, mm-hmm. but understanding why we're moved by something, why something speaks to us, why an actor speaks to us, what their real life and on-screen presence represents to us. And I think it's a way for us to interrogate the world and to understand and engage with the world in this indirect, secondary world way.
Agreed. Couldn't say it better.
Brian, God, maybe I should have a podcast. Brian, any thoughts?
Wow.
You'd be really good behind the microphone, David. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. It, you know, I'm one of the things also, I think, as we talk about for tonight and our episodes going forward for Into the West, it's also about renewal.
Hmm.
Not just death, but we get to revisit these actors and actresses, directors, whoever, these artists once again. So they are in some ways renewed into our minds and our memories. So I think that is an important part of this kind of process that we're going to be paneling.
That's really, I think, a insightful and helpful comment. I'm thinking about the next episode that we need to schedule for, which is our Gene Hackman review. And you know, we covered the Gene Hackman's life and films to some degree, John and Alicia and I, on the subscriber podcast, 11Zs. And there was a question, well, why are you redoing Gene Hackman? And it's like, well, because Brian and Lisa didn't get a chance to talk about Hackman.
That's right.
And he is such an important figure for both of you individually, but also for film in general. And so the way it worked, you're right. So for folks who are new to this podcast, somebody passes away, we do a filmography review that is recorded, and then we put up, we, the three of us, choose 10 movies, I think it was. Or four? Are we doing three or four?
Three or four,
depending
on the filmography. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you, the public, audience, listeners, can vote on what movie we end up watching and then reviewing in detail. And so the conversation won for the Gene Hackman review. I had never seen it, and yet Gene Hackman is a favorite actor. Hugely influential, you know, huge, shadow is not the right word, but just looms large in my mind as a great film actor. I'd never seen The Conversation before.
Oh, wow.
So this is my first time. And it was like you're saying, Brian, there was a renewal. I was like, oh, this is this actor. I did not, it was really profound. And so what you're saying is perfectly what is my experience so far in these two.
Yeah. You get to live with it again.
Right.
Which is the beauty of art. Yeah.
That's right.
Indeed. Marilyn, I see there are rich, rich notes in our outline here. Before we get into that, I didn't know if you wanted to reflect at all in general. I know we were talking off air a little bit before we hit recording. We were talking about the process of grief and processing grief and how important it was. And we were all joking that this is kind of a podcast where we do that. But grief is a many layered thing. It's not a straight line, simple thing.
No, it isn't. I think some people have misinterpreted the famous five stages of grieving as a linear process. I think it's more a question of identifying these are things that you may well find yourself in at various points. And he may circle around back to this, you know, to anger 3 or 4 or 5 times, and in between have bargaining and, you know, all the other things. So it's important to recognize there is no pattern. There is no right way, wrong way. We each experience it differently, and much depends on who it is that has died, mm-hmm. how we are responding, but also the consequences for us personally. You know, I don't believe in grief, pain Olympics. Right. So I don't want to say, oh, this kind of death is far worse than this kind of death. But I have to imagine, I've never been a parent. I am now a grandparent through the grace of my partner. Thank you. I can't imagine the grief of losing a child, set aside the grief of losing a parent. Mm-hmm. And yet, and I'm also not going to say that somebody can't grieve the loss of a parent as much as they would grieve the loss of a child, because it's so individual. You know, you expect certain things in the pattern of life, but when they actually happen, that's when you really find out how you're going to respond. And you're not the same person you were 5 years ago, or that you will be 5 years from now. So the best thing is be gentle with yourself, and as much as you are able, just allow things to wash over you as they come, and know wherever you are now, it won't always be this way.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, when you, and that's also the experience that you may have for a movie or a TV show. You may be in your 20s and you watch this show or movie, and then 20 years later, you know, this memory, this renewal, it you know, you change, and so your perception and experiences change. So what you're seeing on the screen may also change. It's not static. Yeah.
Unquestionably. And the same with books. You know, yes. I go back to Lord of the Rings again and again, because every time I read it, I see something different. Yeah. I experience it differently. You know, my first 2 decades of reading it, I was more in Frodo's shoes. Now I'm really in Bilbo's shoes. Ooh, because I'm kind of looking for my own Rivendell here, folks. I just turned 70. There aren't a lot of Rivendells out there in your local possibilities for eventual, you know, retirement communities. But it also shows up in literature because it is the one commonality we all have, along with being born. Yeah. We're all going to die. And actually, if people have listened to our most recent Earthsea episode, we talk about death. And I actually say on air, you know, I want somebody to read these particular lines from Ursula K. Le Guin's The Other Wind at my memorial service. Because this is what I personally believe will happen when I die. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the sort of thing that as the event comes closer, well, I mean, like, okay, some people will avoid it all the more, and others will say, yeah, this is, it's part of the whole package. And different literature, films, poetry, whatever, music, will offer different ways of understanding it. But in addition to those two commonalities that we have, the two poles, if you will, we all experience the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. And you might include the exceptions of the Inuit on the northern coast of North American continent and the Sami on the European continents, because, you know, think about their solar experience, if you will.
You know, yeah,
right.
They've got several months of darkness. They have several months of light. And I think the sun kind of spirals around on the around the polar north. Where is east and west in that? Right.
Yeah.
So the Inuit appear to have no particular associations with any of the four directions. But the Sami do have some, insofar as, not surprisingly, the south is considered the place of warmth and good things, and the north is the place of cold and suffering. And those are the important directions for them.
Yeah.
So in between these two extremes, if you will, this middle ground, or Mithengard, or Middle Earth, if you like, that's where most of us dwell, and we experience the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. So the association of that with birth and death makes a lot of sense. The southernmost peoples I could think of were the Maori, although I'm also familiar with the Maori to a very tiny degree, so maybe that was part of it too. But they have their own star compass. They are fascinating people when it comes to astronomy, because, of course, they came to Aotearoa, New Zealand, through celestial navigation and knowing the currents and also things like birds and so forth. But they have a word. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to interject something too. Very important.
Sure.
Thought about it. It's not a very important thought. It's a thought about geography and metaphor. We talk about a person's life, you know, in the spring, the summer, the fall, the winter of a person's life and what have you.
Sure.
And my mom, who is a not infrequent listener to these podcasts, she may remember she spent some time in East Africa, once in Kenya. They did some volunteering there at a college, and she was teaching some, running like a graduate seminar. And her, a lot of her professional career was as an English literature professor. And so talking with the students about European literature and the metaphor of seasons to map on people's lives, and they were like, we understand what fall is, but we don't have it. We have short rains and long rains.
These
concepts, these land, these regional based metaphors, and then of course that sets something in literature, and then that literature is a dominant literature, and then so the metaphor spreads. So I think it's just scanning through your notes here, you were working to include a number of different points of views around this, and I think that's helpful and interesting for us to consider, because I don't know how we process grief in different places and different times.
Oh gosh, that's a whole nother podcast.
exactly. But there is something that is within our shared humanity around this, and so however we describe it or however we put it into whatever sort of framework, it's still something that we all process in some way.
And of course, most listeners will probably have first encountered the phrase "Into the West" from the Jackson films of Lord of the Rings, and the beautiful, beautiful song that Annie Lennox composed and wrote the lyrics for and sang at the end. And that's, I think, where most people will make this association. But, you know, they weren't alone in that. There's a whole, as you say, David, a lot of different cultures that have that same connection. But you do right to point out the equatorial communities are not going to know too much from one season to another, because they just don't have a lot of seasonal change.
So it's a good thing that we're dealing with a fictional world here.
But they still have sun rising in the east and setting in the west.
Yes, they do. Right. And Tolkien was still a man of European culture.
Oh, yes. And believe me, I have a whole section on Tolkien. How could I not? But back to the Maori.
Just a plug to everybody to when the episode comes out for Project Hail Mary, you have to tune in, because Marilyn brings Tolkien into Project Hail Mary. So you'll have to listen to get the, how did she fit those pieces together?
Yes.
Hopefully that will not lead anybody to not listen.
Well, we're a self-selecting community
here. That's right.
If you don't like Tolkien, you're going to have a real hard time here. That's all I can say.
But please continue.
Yes. So the Maori have the star compass by which they navigate, and they have the word Tomakanga, which represents west, where the sun returns to the ocean. So your idea of return, Brian, interestingly comes up in a somewhat different context there. But more generally, the word refers to a portal, a significant entrance, or a gateway, which is a place of transition from the common world into the world of light, which I really like, because so many of our cultures consider death to be the land of darkness.
Yeah.
You know, think of the Greek myths and, you know, Hades, and, you know, if you're lucky, you get to the Elysian fields, but even there's not a whole lot to do. But you know, this transition into light and the place of return, you know, what are you returning to? And will you come back from the place of return? I mean, it just raises mm-hmm. a number of different possible. But in Nauri astronomy, the West is associated with endings and the completion of the day. So Tomokanga, as I say, translates to the entrance or the place of return. Because, again, sun rises in the east, sets in the west, and wherever else you are in the total circumference of the planet, the day begins in the east and ends in the west. So it seems quite reasonable that the east be associated with birth and the west with death. Many contemporary pagans consider the west to be the place of the ancestors. And this is very much in line with some Celtic beliefs. Christian churches, cathedrals, tombs, and graves are frequently on an east-west alignment, with the altars of the buildings in the east. And the grave markers are going to also face east, so that if you envision the bodies lying with their heads against the gravestones, when they rise up and open their eyes, they'll be looking to the east, because that is where life returns, the resurrection happens, the sun rises again. And I don't know how much that is followed these days, but if you go to Europe, if you travel around in Europe very much, you'll see it's almost universal. And certainly church altars are still in the east. This goes back to Egyptian times. And one source I read said the practice of burying the dead so their face would face the rising sun goes back to ancient Egyptian and Greeks who worshiped the sun god. According to their beliefs, it was the most appropriate for their dead to face the sun to greet each new day. The idea that came to represent embracing the next life, and that contributed to its widespread acceptance, especially, of course, in Judeo-Christian societies, with the belief in afterlife and so forth.
Quick shout out. I'm trying to see if I can find the episode, but recently, I believe it was on an episode of the American public television show called Nova, but I may be wrong. I'm trying to find it. I'll see if I can put it in the show notes. We watch it. Daughter sometimes will go through different documentaries and things like this and pull up a show. And so we ended up stumbling onto this one. And it was about a group of Egyptian Egyptologists who, I think it was right around before the pandemic, opened up and discovered some new tombs that and some new artifacts that had never been before. And they opened up a whole new field where a lot of excavation work hadn't gone yet. But it's interesting that these are Egyptian-led and Egyptian-staffed archaeological, creating new archaeological record. And
Finally, for the first time. And I don't think a lot of people know that for a chunk of time, well, one generation anyway, there was one particular pharaoh whose name escapes me at all, but one of you will know it, who announced that there was only one god, and this was the sun god, Amun-Ra. And he did his best to do a lot of conversion in a very short period of time with new priests and defacing of some religious artifacts and so forth. It didn't last. Didn't last beyond him.
No, Philip Glass did an opera, I believe.
Was it Was it Akhenaten?
Yes, that's it.
Yay. Oh, yeah. Memory still serves from time to time. Always reassuring.
Yeah. That goes over my head. So that's the part of the brain I share with Brian. So.
So anything else anybody wants to comment on before we move on to Tolkien?
I think it was the Saqqara necropolis, which is near Memphis, that it was the pyramid or the major find was. Mm. So I believe it's a Nova episode. I'm still trying to find the exact episode. But anyway, Saqqara.
it shows you kind of it just, you know, listening to Marilyn's great notes, it just, you know, the geography, the solar, the power of the sun, you know, and giving you birth and rebirth, how anchored these societies were to natural settings that we forget today. very much so as we, you know, live in our homes and electronic devices and what have you. And unless you're farming or doing some other skill that you have to keep an eye on the land, what the, you know, the sun and the weather, it really is a great perspective on this kind of natural settings, natural things, it literally in our orbit as a planet, and how that plays out in how we see the world, how we interact with life and death. It's great stuff.
And I would be remiss, living as I do on unceded Wabanaki territory, to not note that the name Wagmanaki, which is a collective name for a number of individual tribes in this region, call themselves the People of the Dawn, because the Mi'kmaq, which are one of the what we consider the four tribes of what the Wabanaki now, the Mi'kmaq live on the furthest east coast of, it's probably Nova Scotia, right? That's furthest east of all the Maritimes. They are the first of all the indigenous peoples in the entire continent to greet the sun. And they take this very, very seriously. To this day, they greet the sun every morning. Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
Those who live tribally and on, on the within the tribal communities.
Well, you know, Marilyn, there's you know, ritual plays an important part in our lives. If you didn't already know,
what an amazing observation, really? David.
Wow. Well, and my other observation to go with that is that you do have a your own podcast called Rings and Rituals.
Yes,
I do. Yes,
and,
I do.
And someday when you have time, you know, you can just talk about rituals and interesting rituals all found all over the world.
All kinds of fun things might happen, huh?
Yeah. Well, sorry, that's my executive producer side.
No. I'm happy to have free advertising, David. You go for it.
Someday when we all become famously wealthy from podcasting, we all just give up our day jobs and podcast all the time.
There you go.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah.
So moving on to Tolkien, this is a very timely question because it was only in early March of this year that I read a post on John Garth's Steady blog, Steady being the European version of Patreon, but it's also for artists, not just strictly for podcasting. I guess Patreon is too. Anyway, he put in this wonderful article called Tolkien's Land of the Dead and Going West in 1914 to 18. This was the whole question that came around. Not surprisingly, in the First World War. And during that time, English speakers didn't, quote unquote, go west when they died. That was not an English expression at that point. But apparently, the phrase was introduced by the British Army soldiers from Scotland and the west of Ireland, who, of course, you know, all these different troops came together in the trenches in one way or another, even though we're separate regiments. Sooner or later, they all came together. And there, this was part of the unregarded bedrock of ancient Celtic tradition. So we were mentioning before tribal cultures and ritual and so forth. And the ancient Celts, this was a big deal. I mentioned earlier that the Celts had this tradition of the West is the place of the ancestors, and contemporary pagan practitioners, if they're calling in the four directions, will often refer to the West as the place of the ancestors. Some talk about the North instead, but, you know, different regions, different cultures, different ancestors. So to go on quoting John Garth here, the Oxford English Dictionary declares that this 20th century usage, quote, became common during the Great War, close quote, which, of course, is World War One. It first entered print in the Times at the end of 1914, when a reporter was asked whether any readers knew the origin of, quote, the soldier's curious phrase for death, the going west. Peter Gulliver, our inside man at the OAD, has also found an earlier instance from the first weeks of the war. And here's a quote. One man was splashed with the blood of his comrade, who had been blown in half by a piece of shrapnel. He was glad of his escape. A very near call, but was sorry for the friend who, quote, had gone west, close quote, as he called it.
Wow.
So as early as 1914, this was appearing in the Times. And as Garth points out, they got the Times in the common room of Tolkien's college when he was there as an undergraduate. He himself fought trench warfare for a period of several months, 1917 to 18, if I remember correctly. And by November 1914, as again, I'll pick up with Garth, said he'd at least perused Longfellow's Song of Hiawatha, whose hero ends by sailing west in this way, and this is now quoting Longfellow, in the glory of the sunset, to the islands of the blessed, to the kingdom of Ponema, to the land of the hereafter. Now, I am in no way putting out any kind of brief in favor of Longfellow's knowledge of the customs of the indigenous peoples that he was supposedly representing in his very romantic 19th century poem. Nevertheless, there are plenty of tribal nations who consider this to be the case. Another example with Tolkien is a poem that I really love, but that is not very well known by most people because it only appears in the Histories of Middle-earth volumes. Hmm. And it refers, it's called Habanon in the West. Habanon is a place where the soldiers or the humans gather, because back in the day, in his earlier versions of the Silmarillion, humans might wind up in one of three places. They might actually have the delightful pleasure of going to what we now call Valinor. They might get booted into Morgoth's camp. No. They might go to be judged by this personage called Fui Nienna, who was very, very different from the Nienna that we see in the published Silmarillion, where she's very much a Our Lady of Sorrows figure. But Habanon is kind of almost a purgatorial place. It's kind of gray and shadowy and quiet. And it is implicitly in the West, as Garth says. Prefatory lines to the poem call it that region where one draws nigh to the places that are not of men. This is closely paraphrased in the broadly contemporary Kendall Lexington. Lexington, listen to me. I'm still back with the American Revolution. Kenyal Lexicon, where Habanon is the name in Teleatka, which is another Elvish language or dialect, for a region on the borders of Valinor, and that is its literal meaning. So this poem describes men, humans, sitting around a campfire, singing songs in this perpetual dusk. So it's really not a terrible thing. It's neither the glory of Valinor, nor is it the hells of Morgoth. It's simply a place to be. And wow. I am convinced, because when I read of this, I am thinking of Tolkien's experience in the training camps before he crossed over to France, where at the end of a long, hard day of training, some of the soldiers would get out their guitars and they'd sit around the fire and they'd play. So, as I say, the first time I read this poem, it had deep resonances for me. And I really believe that it also did for Tolkien, even though Habanon eventually quietly dropped out of his lexicon. For listeners who can't really understand the word, it's spelled H-A-B-B-A-N-A-N, if you want to do some more digging around. So you look back and you say, okay, Egyptians, Babylonians, Sophocles, Plato, old Irish poems, like the Voyage of Bran, the Greek Elysium, the Nordic nations, they all have this concept of the West as the place where the dead go. Going west, back to Garth's words again, the novel soldier idiom for dying exemplified the interdependence of language and legend, which struck Tolkien in 1914, and which kicked off his myth-making project. It injected a Celtic tradition into English ways of thinking, as his myth-making would inject Celtic elves and other worlds into a mythology for England. And then one last piece, G.B. Smith was one of Tolkien's dearest friends, and he was killed in this First World War. He was also a lovely poet. If anybody has the time, to look up his poetry. It is available in a publication. Garth has written about it a lot. But this poem is called Intercessional. There is a place where voices of great guns do not come, where rifle, mine, and mortar forevermore are dumb, where there is only silence and peace eternal and rest, set somewhere in the quiet aisles beyond death's starry west.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah.
Can I just say that G.B. Smith died way too soon? Ugh. As did so many other soldiers who died in that horrible, horrible conflict.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think this is really makes a good case for how the whole phrase "into the West" came into the English-British lexicon. It had been in the Irish for who knows how long, and, you know, ditto the Scots in the West who were, you know, settled by the Irish, but don't tell the Scots, they hate that. But it's true. Sorry.
Yeah. We Scots are a feisty bunch.
Yes.
Yeah. One time, an English captain told me the story about how he'd been teaching history to the Scots. And he gave this little factoid out. And there was this Scottish sergeant who just, "I didn't believe it, sir." And so he said, "Soldier, you're ordered to go into look up in the Encyclopedia Britannica the history of early Scotland." Next class comes around, soldier comes back and sits down. And so the captain says, "Well, soldier, I didn't care, sir. I'm not a mick, sir." So you can tell him, but you can't convince him.
No.
Yeah, right. yes, yeah, indeed. it just shows you that, just illustrates so well why, you know, you see the movies and then the recent film TV show, the Rings of Power, you know, the Two Trees, Lord, you know, the Land of Valinor, all that stuff's out west, and it's not an accident that he just didn't randomly choose a direction, that it was very meaningful to him. West was very meaningful to him. It's pretty incredible.
If Tolkien ever did anything randomly or unthinkingly, I would love to see a paper on that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it may exist out there somewhere, but yeah.
It may. Yeah. Anything that was not culturally based.
Right.
Whatever culture it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He may have gone with the knowledge of the time, quote unquote, but still, he did his best.
Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we can start widening the scope of our conversation from there.
Sounds good.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
And we're back. So I see in our outline that there are a whole bunch of other notes. But before we get into those, I was curious, Lisa, if you had any thoughts or reflections about what Marilyn was illuminating for us in that last bit of conversation. What are you reacting to? What's popping in your mind?
Well, okay, this may sound a little woo-woo, but that...
I'll allow it.
Okay, thank you. that we all are one energy. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, yes, because of geography and culture and religion and language, you know, how we interpret or communicate our experiences differ, but it just keeps coming back to me that we are all like one consciousness in a way or something, you know? And so that's what I think about. So.
Mm-hmm. And let me assure you, Lisa, as one who is a Quaker pagan priestess of Persephone with strong Buddhist leanings, I have no trouble with woo-woo. I may not agree with your woo-woo, but, you know, it's well, your woo-woo.
Brian and I, Brian and I were raised on woo-woo, so. yes.
With all the advantages and the drawbacks.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. I was just thinking, listening to Marilyn, especially when she's was giving us that last poem from G.B. Smith, that, you know, for Tolkien, you know, this Into the West stuff is born of literally blood and guts and of war, of the worst of what humanity does to itself and to the world. And so how much is our percept, you know, so it led me down the thought process of, you know, Egyptians, they were very tied into the cycles of the Nile River and their planting cycles, things like this. And just how connected our points of views are of an afterlife, if we believe in a life after of some kind, how much that is set in our present, right? And what we're where and who we are now, thinking about how important is it for me to think that there's an afterlife? Do I care if there is one, or what does it look like? And is it full of, you know, milk and is it a land of milk and honey, or is it a place of quiet and repose? How much our point of view is colored by the circumstances of our life and our culture and our upbringings. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And possibly the literature we read.
And possibly the television shows and movies we watch.
Mm-hmm. And the films we see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian, any thoughts from what Marilyn was?
I think, you know, one of the things that I reflect on and I remember in undergraduate time where I took philosophy classes. I was a philosophy major, and I was very interested in this idea of morality. And we were going through one class about different areas of a moral system, but I really took home, really for the rest of my life, and I think this plays into this idea of West, you know, and death and renewal, is that I really believe that human beings are in many ways universal, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there are things that tie us together, regardless of culture or mm-hmm. religion. You know, it's, I think that this going West, you know, and it's not absolute, right? And Marilyn has said that so well in the beginning. It's like some cultures don't see the solar viewpoint that other cultures do. So it's not absolute, but it's universal, which means there are some exceptions, right? In this meaning of the word universal. So it's just really a great way to bind us, and I'm hoping as we go through Into the West episodes that
just don't
it
bind
will
us with one ring, Brian.
That's yeah, right, no. Exactly.
Bad idea.
That's right.
That somebody tried that.
Yeah.
Hey, you brought that up, man. I didn't. Yeah. You know?
Got to walk right into that one. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Ba boom. So as we go forward with these episodes, you know, we get a chance to kind of bring people in and have conversations as, you know, we may have differing opinions on a particular artist, but it's universal to stop and to think about and process these lives of these mm-hmm. artists.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we were talking before about this, you know, the idea of grief and how we move with grief, how grief moves with us as we move through time and where we are. My brain is doing the tangent thing where I'm like over here and over here. I was just thinking that Nicole is big on grief right now. If you go over to Nevermind the Music, I forget which episode is it, but there was something about grief recently. And so maybe we'll have to, what you just said there, Brian, made me think, oh, well, maybe we'll have to have Nicole over on Into the West podcast.
That would be great.
Yeah,
that would
be good. Absolutely.
To talk about the nonlinear stages of grief. But that, you know, this idea that, yeah, and there's this tension. So going back to what, Lisa, what you were saying and thinking about, well, how do we affirm the in a modern times context here and now from where we sit and the people that are going to be listening to this podcast, right, are a selection of a selection of a selection. How do we, from our point of privilege, how easy it is for us to say, oh, we're all, there's a universality to humanity. But it is pretty often brought up by a lot of philosophers and thinkers and different leaders over time that there is a human universality, right? There is something that is the same about us in time and place. But how do we do that and then also respect and honor the traditions of people? There's a tension there, right? Like, oh, well, we're all the same, but then somebody else's culture might be like, no, we're not. And yeah. I don't appreciate you putting that universality upon me or my culture, or at least acknowledging what maybe your culture did and, you know, or didn't do in certain times. And so there's this tension that exists there. So how do we, what's the opportunity for us in like on this podcast and on this series to be thinking about grief and its, you know, it's, I don't want to say universal, but like its commonality, how we do that. And something I was thinking, Brian, you were saying something that you said before is that in the renewal, well, the renewal doesn't happen on its own. It's not photosynthesis. It just happens.
Right.
It'd be nice if it were.
It happens in community.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it happens with intentionality.
100%.
And it happens in dialogue. And be that, you know, one-to-many dialogue going out as a podcast or in conversation. But it doesn't exist without us entering into that space and intentionally bringing it up.
And there are certain Mesoamerican indigenous cultures who would have a very different view about death.
100%, right? And I don't know what those would be, but there's like, yeah, I can't imagine that everybody's going to process grief the same way.
Well, and I'm thinking about, you know, the human sacrifice. And
yes.
The, you know, how do you treat the sacrificial human before they are sacrificed, and how has that carried over into contemporary Mesoamerican indigenous peoples, and you know, how much has Christianity shaped that or not? I mean, we're still very complex individuals, even if the sun always rises in the east and sets in the west for almost all of us.
Well, I mean, that's what binds our community as well, because as we're all sitting here processing all of these things and talking as we are this evening, it is through art, it is through literature, it is through poems, it is through theater, it is through music, you know, and film and television that universality comes together. And it really is a great way for all of us to find ways to experience and interpret what is going on in our lives is through art, you know, big art, capital A art, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Marilyn.
I think the one generalization I'd be comfortable with is, as far as I know, virtually all human cultures have deep feelings about death.
Yeah.
They may be, you know, aversive, they may be attractive, but still
affirming or really terrifying, hard, but yeah,
it's really hard for human cultures to just ignore death or pass it off as no big deal.
there's another thing that I think human beings have big feelings, maybe not about, but a way that we process feelings. And that's what Lisa is just saying, capital A art.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think human culture can be human culture without self-expression and self-reflection. Yes. We reflect through art, right? Mm-hmm. It is with the stories mm-hmm. that we tell ourselves through dance, through music, through tales around the campfire, you know, banjo present or not, right? You know, but we as a species have to self-reflect. It is like
inherent. And we're storytellers.
Yeah.
Humans are storytellers.
Right. Right.
We are indeed, can't underline that hard enough. And that is also how we pass our culture along mm-hmm. to the next generation.
Yeah. And I love, you know, the bits that you were telling us, Marilyn, about Tolkien, you know, listening to the guitar player, you know, it must have been something very special for him being in, you know, in World War like that, being in just horrible situations. And you get a moment of time where you can maybe reflect and listen to the music. And as you know very well, Marilyn, how instrumental poetry and literature was to him. Yeah. It was really a huge part of his life.
In fact, he was quoted in several places as saying that it was the experience of war that set the rocket off in story. Mm. It became a really important tool for him to process what he had been through, to reflect on this horrible human penchant for killing each other in particularly gruesome and violent, bloody ways, and how people survive that or don't, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think when it's fair for people to say, well, Frodo survived. He didn't really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was still alive and walking around.
Right.
But he was not the Frodo of the Shire before he left.
You know, we talk, a modern conversation is moral injury, right? Your body may be whole, but morally you're gravely wounded. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you're into PTSD and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, and you're irrevocably changed by.
Exactly, David. Irrevocable change.
Yes, mm-hmm. right.
And that's another good definition for death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That sums it up. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
It makes me, so I was reflecting the other week about something related to death, because I don't think, we probably, thoughts of death probably stray through all of our minds in random sort of times and particles. And I was thinking about what a kind of, I personally do not have a strong need or desire to have a afterlife waiting for me. I'm kind of okay with the ambiguity of not having an answer for that. That's me. But I was thinking that, God, it is kind of a shame to think of like all of these people and all of these stories and all of these experiences and all of these comings togethers or these, you know, moments in life that were like, oh, wow, that was a moment, right? That then those are just gone, right? Or those are just not available, or they're just not mm-hmm. in existence anymore. What have we done with the collective experiential memory of our species over millennia, over these millennia? And I'm like, I'm a little, I don't know. I'm not, not kind of happy with, with that idea of like, oh, it just all is just, it doesn't mean anything that it doesn't mean anything. Right. It's just, oof, it moved. I'm like, okay, I get that. But at the same time, like there's a, you know, think of all the people that we've known and all the cool things that they might have done or seen or places that they've walked or people that they've met or conversations that they had.
Yeah.
And with the film stars, we're lucky because we have a remnant of them.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lisa.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. No, I mean, and that's why in my opinion, deaths like Heath Ledger or River Phoenix or Philip Seymour Hoffman or others where they were quite young. And part of the mourning process, I know in general, is you are mourning the future of what could have been, you know, the narrative that you had in your mind of what my future is like with this person on in my world somehow. You're also grieving the end of that story. Because it can't happen. And so there's grieving definitely
What had not yet come to pass.
Exactly. And so, you know, I mean, I was profoundly affected by the death of Heath Ledger. And it would only be through conversations like we're having tonight that I could understand something like that. It's like, but gosh, you know, what he could have made us feel. You know,
I was commenting to Jean's wife. We were visiting this weekend with them in New York, and I see lovely. Lisa, you're wearing a Hamilton t-shirt.
Yes.
And it turns out that, well, my daughter, as people know, really got into Hamilton. We're in ups and downs, you know, it comes and goes kind of thing. We're in that stage net right now where it comes and goes a little bit. The obsession has waned a little bit. But we were just at Hamilton's house, actually, in New York City, and we got our passports stamped and a bunch of other stuff. Anyway, so we were like, we were talking about it with Jean, and his son hadn't seen it, so we put it on. And I completely have lost my point of thought now. I know what I was going to say.
What could have been?
Yeah, I was saying to Jean's wife, I said, we were reflecting on Hamilton and reflecting on Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I'm touching a lot of wood as I say this. We are so lucky that Lin-Manuel Miranda he hasn't reached the apex of his career yet. Mm-hmm. And I was just thanking the powers that be that we have him and we have not yet lost him. And so that idea of grieving what yet had not come to pass, that's... I had never thought of it in that way before. You just
said what you said. It's like Jonathan Larson for Rent. Again, me being the theater nerd, you know, which Rent went on to win absolutely everything and touches millions of people very deeply. And the fact that he died during tech rehearsal before it went to Broadway. So he never, you know, I mean, it's just, So those are poignant.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm trying to think what poet it was who wrote the lines, of all the words that have ever been, the saddest star it might have been.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I think that's someone Google that. About here.
I was going to, but I thought,
you want to break the spell.
But then the other thing is...
Wait, what was that again, Marilyn? Saddest words what?
Saddest words.
What might have been? Oh, look, Google is
the Google's Google giving is it to
feeding
you,
it for me, feeding it to me.
Yeah, the other sort of the other direction.
John Greenleaf
Whittier, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who wrote a lot of hymns too? I don't know that a week goes by. Maybe, well, for certain, a month doesn't go by without my reflecting on any time I'm trying to remember something from my past or asking a question about my past. And I think there's no one left alive who can answer this for me.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I'm going through that a lot.
Has died. Both my parents have died. Mm-hmm. I have a nephew, but of course he didn't come into my life until I was 21 and really wasn't a part of it to be able to answer the kinds of questions that sometimes rise for me. Mm-hmm. And so, I know that novelists, again, to come back to the whole creative side of things, was it Fahrenheit 450 who wrote about everybody 451 had to memorize a book because, and they became the keeper of that book.
Oh, wow. Ooh, have I read that? I can't remember reading. This is
it's not an original to me.
Yeah, this is a John question.
For sure.
John, if you're listening.
But this idea that
you're coming to this podcast at some point.
We are cultural carriers.
Yes, right.
And again, I go back to Indigenous people who lost so many. There's so many huge gaps in their cultures because the elders were the culture keepers, and they died from the diseases.
Yeah,
and they died from the long marches.
Yes,
and from the stress of life, and just the overwhelming grief. We're back to grief again.
Yes,
being uprooted, displaced, and seeing their entire world completely altered. And how just today I was listening on the radio about somebody talking about a member of a Native tribe who had been researching Native foods and was making a Native meal for his community. And he noticed that one of the elders was crying, and he went over and said, "Auntie, what's wrong? What's wrong?" And she said, "I'm tasting our people's food again for the first time. Know, I see over there is a child who is tasting our people's food. And so a piece of our culture has come back."
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be so profound. Mm-hmm. And that's the sadness that you were talking about, Lisa, is knowing that the particular cultures of these artists and creatives, that's done. Mm-hmm. We have the record, we have the legacy, so we can go back and revisit. But what we have is what we have, and we're never going to have another one. You know, Tolkien's never going to write another book. No. I mean, Christopher did his best.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Make up for that. But still, you know, which makes what we do have all the more precious and therefore worthy of being memorialized, mm-hmm. and remembered and talked about, and the shared grief, but also the shared joy and the pleasure of what they bring us.
Yes.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah.
So I see there's a few notes in here. I don't know if everyone's gotten a few things that they wanted, but I feel like we're coming to a... Mm-hmm. I feel like the sun is setting on this conversation. Yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, we don't hear about the Duat in ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
Oh. Or Buddhism. I mean, I felt badly I left out Asia almost entirely.
Yeah.
Another podcast. I mean,
yeah.
You can do some more research and we'll...
Yeah.
Or just do a part two of this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is possible. Well, the conversations can just continue to carry forward.
Yeah. But I think we've done a really good job and Marilyn too in summarizing across culture. Obviously grief and death, but you know, the East and the West of it all, you know, that we see in ancient Greece and Chinese Buddhism and then the Aztecs and so forth, and how that's carried over to modern Western culture, you know, with our cowboys riding into the West, or, you know, any of those themes and motifs that we see in our, you know, modern literature and film.
Great curtain call.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you for raising that, because I'm seeing this final couple of sentences and I want whoever wrote them down to read them, because I think it's a great way to end.
So the related to the cowboys riding into the West, is that right, Marilyn? It's geography, but it also symbolizes both an ending and a new beginning. It is a setting sun, the sea passage, the liminal horizon between what is known and what is beyond. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Mic drop.
There you go.
All right. Thank you all so very much. I'll do some show notes post-recording here. I'll throw some stuff on the end. You know what? No, I think we're just going to leave it here. I don't think...
Yeah.
I think it's fair to leave it here. There's always admin to do on a podcast, and there's always another podcast where we can cover them. So
indeed, and well, who knows, it'll come up as we talk about these different artists and their films and their work, you know, so there's a lot of opportunities to continue the conversation that we just began and just started tonight.
Exactly.
Well, I just want to thank you for including me in the conversation, because
I'm so glad to meet you.
Yeah, I know.
Have you guys been on a podcast before?
No,
Brian and I have, but
yeah.
Right.
I was so stoked, you know, so.
Yeah.
So was I.
Yeah. My best friend is a Tolkien, you know, would love the Tolkien part enthusiast of this podcast, but I was going to ask you, but she did study under John Garth in Oxford. She does.
No, I want to sit at her feet.
I know. She does those summer, you know, where all she spends a couple things. Weeks. Yeah. So not like she has a degree in this or anything, but, you know, in her more leisure time now, she's definitely going back to John Garth in Oxford and learning as much as she can.
Well, some summer I am going to do that. I don't know when. It always seems to be something else that gets in the way. Just having the 2 weeks Oxford experience.
Yeah.
But to add on John Garth and Tolkien over that is like,
Yeah.
That's it. I can die happy.
And then we'll have these podcasts to remember.
Yeah, we'll have a memento podcast.
Shall I start sending my notes now?
Oh, very good.
Thank you all, Marilyn. Thanks for making the time, as always.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you for including me.
We'll talk again soon, Lisa, Brian. We will get on the scheduling for the Conversation podcast, and we will get that recorded and out before long. And then after that, I believe
it's Catherine O'Hara.
Catherine O'Hara. Yes.
Which is happy laughter.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much for doing this work, folks, because, you know, it's sad. It's hard. There's feelings involved. And it's lovely that you've taken it on and give everybody else who listens a chance to.
What was cool was the way that it was created.
Totally organically. And that's the best way to do it.
Totally within the community, totally on the Discord. Just sort of.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the best
tradition.
Yeah.
And it's the best projects.
So, all right. Well, let's wrap it up there, and we will all talk again very soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good night, folks.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.